Hi, everybody. My name is Chris Dias. I am a program manager on the Visual Studio Code team. And joining me today is my my good friend, Chuck Lance. Chuck, you want to say hi?
Hey, how's it going?
All right. Today, we are going to talk to you about remote development with Visual Studio Code. Here's our agenda. We're going to spend a few minutes talking about the motivations, how we got here, the architecture of VS Code, how it enables remote development. We'll look at the remote extensions themselves, which kind of bridge the desktop with the remote backend. We want to spend most of our time in demos, and we want to leave 10 minutes at the end of the session for a Q&A. So let's get started. So motivations, how did we end up with remote development in Visual Studio Code? Well, it really started with the Windows Subsystem for Linux, or WSL. And if you're not familiar with WSL, it's really the ability to run multiple Linux distros, full Linux distros inside Windows. And so basically at the end of the day, you end up with a Linux distro running inside Windows. And we tried to teach VS Code about the Linux distro, things like which direction the slashes go in, how to get extensions to understand the file system that's in Linux and things like that. And it sort of worked, sort of figured out how to make debugging work. But the more we sort of peeled back the onion, the more difficult it became, and then we realized we had to teach all the extensions about WSL, and it just wasn't going to work. At the same time, we were noticing from conversations with customers that development is really getting more and more remote, and it's especially true today with the situation that we're in. And you look at big companies like Facebook who have mono repos that don't even fit on a laptop, or language services to work across that. They basically develop off a remote VM in the cloud. Data scientists are using specialized VMs for training their data models. And we see this whole explosion of browser-based tools that give you access from anywhere. But throughout all of those, it's really not that great a development experience. If you're SSHing into a box, you're usually using Terminal and Vim, which works, but it's not great. Remote desktop has been around for a while on Windows, hard to set up on Linux, and it can be a little bit laggy. If you do have tools that work against a remote machine, you have to recreate the entire environment locally in order to have that experience that you expect, but that kind of defeats the whole purpose of working remotely. And then browser-based tools are just that, they're browser-based tools only, which means you have to sort of move everything to the cloud or stay on the desktop. So we thought with Visual Studio Code, we could do a little bit better. So the idea that we had was that instead of sort of developing locally and moving things around, that you would develop in the context of the remote host. So this is the architecture of Visual Studio Code today. And it's one of the reasons that Visual Studio Code is able to be sort of robust and fast, because the main process that you see in VS Code, we call it the UI process, the render, that's where sort of everything, your menus, activity bars, all that stuff sort of lives and runs. It's a separate process from where all the extensions run. The extensions are split up in their own process, and that's in case one of the extensions goes down. Then it doesn't take down the whole UI. We can spin that up in the background and you never even know. And then of course, extension hosts or extensions can spin up a number of additional processes to debug the application, run the application. We spin up Git to do source code control and things like that. So this architecture works well for us today on the desktop, but it also turns out to work well for the remote case. So what we did is we kind of put a box around the extension host process, and we called it the VS Code server. And we formalized the communication between the local operating system or the local version of VS Code and then the remote version. And because VS Code runs multi-platform, the VS Code server can run on a different operating system than what the client is running on. So I can run on Windows connected to something that's running in Linux. And the magic of it all really comes with what we call the remote extensions. And the remote extensions sit between the desktop and then the back end. And they know how to talk to that backend. So if you've got WSL or SSH or something like that, the remote extension knows how to talk to that backend and set up the communication channel. So that leads us to the set of remote extensions that we have in the marketplace today. There's three sort of main remote ones we have for WSL, the Windows Subsystem for Linux, for SSH. So if you're SSHing into a box somewhere, generally any modern SSH server you can connect to from VS Code over SSH. And then if you think about Docker containers as basically another VM, you can remote into that VM and use that as an isolated development sandbox, which is pretty cool because then I can share it. People can set up things on their own machines without having to pollute their machines with, whatever framework or tool that's popular today. And then there's Visual Studio Code Spaces. which gives you browser-based access to basically managed instance, managed by us, Microsoft, in the cloud. But it also gives you browser-based access to your own instances of VMs, kind of the do-it-yourself model. So that's what we want to take a look at in the next few minutes in the demo. So we're going to warm up with a quick WSL demo. We're going to remote SSH in a couple of VMs. And then we're going to register one of those VMs so that we can access it from anywhere in the browser. And then what we're going to do is we're going to do Rust development. And we're going to get that all set up on my machine. It's a fresh Windows machine. There's nothing on it. We're going to get that all done in about 30 seconds, which will be cool. So let's get started. Excuse me. So I'm here on Windows. I'm going to start up the new Windows terminal. There's nothing magical here, except that if I click this dropdown, you can see that I've got a number of different terminals that I can run. And one of them is Ubuntu, or another one is Debian, and these are WSL instances installed on my Windows machine. So now I'm running Ubuntu. I can come in here. I've got all my Linux commands. I can go into this folder, which is basically a standard Node application, and I can run Code Insiders. So there's nothing new about this today. You know, from WSL, you can reach back into Windows and execute something, and from Windows, you can reach into WSL and execute things. But the first thing that happens when you come up here in VS Code, you'll see down here in the lower right-hand corner, it says the remote WSL extension is recommended because you have WSL installed in your machine. We're going to ignore this for a minute. I'm going to show you this is, you know, the before. And so if I come over here and I say hover over a file, it might be hard to see on the screen because this won't zoom in, but it says the location is whack WSL $ Ubuntu. It's basically the network drive that's mounted for the Linux machine. Make that a little bit easier to see. I can right click and say copy path. If you didn't know that, it's a cool little trick. I'll bring up the README file. So I'll paste that in. As you can see, that's really where the files are located. That's interesting, but not fully interesting. Let's bring up the terminal. And now you can see some more sort of challenges with WSL, right? There's our folder, command exe can't be started with a network path, UNC path. I'm in Windows. I don't have Node installed on this machine. Node versions. I don't have Node installed on this machine, NPM. None of those are there. So let's install the WSL extension and see what the experience looks like after that. So we'll go back over to the extensions view. I'll just type in WSL. It'll come up. You can see there's a little badge here. It's recommended because we have WSL on the machine. I'll install it, and that's all it takes. So we could get going, but what I want to do is go back over here to the Ubuntu instance, start over, and show you what the experience looks like then. Okay, we'll start it up. Let me take a second. Now we're connected to the WSL instance. And you can see down here in the lower left-hand corner, there's a little badge in this taskbar. It shows us that we're attached to WSL in the Ubuntu distro. We can, in fact, connect to any one of the distros on the machine. So now if I hover over it, you can see it's WAC home, WAC Cristia, so the slashes are going in the right direction. If I go over the terminal, now I'm in WSL. I can go into the folder. I can run npm install. Whoa, it's a lot of alls. And it's very fast because we're running on Linux, and boom, our application is up and available to run. And of course, I can come in here. I could put a breakpoint in any line, press F5, launch the debugger. And of course, once the debugger's up, I can just go to the browser, say localhost 3000, and we're going to hit the breakpoint over in our application. And see, if we hover over platform, it's actually running on the Linux side of things, not on the Windows side of things. So that's kind of WSL in a nutshell. I get the full debugging experience, everything as expected. Okay, so that's WSL. Let's move on to something a little more interesting. I'm going to close down my connection to Ubuntu. Again, you click on that status bar indicator, you get sort of all the key commands for your remote extensions. And one of them I use often is closing the remote connection. Now I'm back, everything is on the Windows side. Okay, so let's move over to the SSH experience. What I've got here is the Azure portal, and obviously I'm gonna use Azure for my VMs that are in the cloud. You can have your VMs wherever you want. It could be in Azure, it could be in some other public cloud, it can be in your own private cloud, it could be a machine under your desk. Doesn't matter, as long as you have SSH access to it. So I've got a bunch of dev boxes here, and I named them for this demo so that you can understand sort of what the runtimes are that installed. So a plain one, .NET Core, Go, Node, Python, things like that. And we want to go and do some development on that. So let's see what that experience looks like. I'm just going to do SSH in a CDIS dev box. All right, this is my standard plain box. This is kind of what you get. There's a folder. We go into the source folder. Nothing there. I can touch index.js and VI it. And this is my development experience, right? I come in here. I can say console.log, if I can remember the syntax for everything. Hello from Vim. Now that's it. I get basic syntax colorization. I remember how to exit out of Vim, WQ. And if I want to run a debug, I kind of have to just, you know, manage it on my own, manage any ports, things like that. That's my development experience. But with VS Code, I think we can do a lot better. So let's go over to VS Code and see what the experience looks like remoting into an SSH box. We'll start it up again. I've got the SSH, the remote SSH extension installed. Let's see, where is it? There it is. And you can sort of read through all the things that it provides. One of the key things that all of the remote extensions contribute is a new explorer. You can see it up here in the upper left-hand corner. It's called the Remote Explorer. And if I click on that, what I'm going to see is actually all the same VMs that I saw earlier in the Azure portal. Now, this isn't some magic, hey, it's connected to Azure type thing. All it is really looking at our SSH config file. If I click on the gear, I can bring up SSH config, and then there's all our dev boxes that we were talking about before. And one of the cool things about the remote SSH extension, it also installs a language service for config files. Excuse me. So then I get a full rich language service for writing my config files if you need help with that. So that's pretty neat. So here's our machine that we were looking at. I'm going to right-click on it. I'm going to say connect to host in a current window. It's going to restart or reload VS Code in this window. You see this little status down here. It's connecting to that machine. Now that we're connected, what I can do is I can bring up the terminal. You can see we're on that dev box. We go to the source folder again. There's our file. Now, if we want to open up this folder, I can actually now run Code Insiders because I'm using the Insiders version of VS Code, if I didn't say that before, which is our nightly builds. And dash R. Dash R is a flag which will reuse this, the current instance. And so I'm actually running this on the VM, and it's reloading VS Code on my Windows machine. But it's opening up that folder that we were in, the source folder, and there's our file. And now I get all the richness of VS Code. So I get a console, I get completions, right? I can do, you know, hello from VS Code, Codeo. And of course, you can see there's a little breakpoint there, but I can set a breakpoint on that line. I can press F5, launch the node debugger. And now I get the full richness of VS Code connected to that machine, and I really didn't do anything different except connect over SSH. So it's a much better development experience than going through the terminal. So that's pretty cool. We can do a little bit better. So let's close this connection. I'm going to go back over to the Remote Explorer one more time. One of the cool things you'll see here is when you do open up a folder on one of these machines, we'll remember it so you have quick access to it. But I've got another box over here. It's got Python installed. I don't have Python installed locally on my machine. We'll open up the SSH host again in the current window. If you say a new window, then you get multiple instances of VS Code open. If you work that way, that's cool. Okay, so our app opens, there's a Python file, and of course I get a recommendation that says, you know, the Python extension is recommended. So this is interesting. Let's take a look at what this looks like. So I'm gonna say show recommendations, and I see the Python extension, but Python and the source code files are in the remote VM. I don't want the Python extension local because that means that the files aren't there. There's no runtime. There's nothing that the Python extension can work against. I actually want the extension to run on the VM. So now in the remote case, when I install an extension, most of them actually, I get an option to install it on the remote box. So install on the SSH over to CDI's dev box Python 3. So we'll do that. The Python extension gets installed over in the VM. And then once it's done, we'll just reload and we'll have a full development experience in Python. So the other thing to note now in the extension viewlet, I actually have these two different sashes or explorers. I'll collapse the local one so you can just focus on what's installed in the remote machine. So we've got the Python extension we just installed, and I've got a couple of other ones. You'll notice that they're all remote because they have this little remote badge next to them. But these two extensions are sort of the handy ones that I have that I like to have installed on every machine. And every time I connect to something, I don't want to have to set it up. But what I can do is go over to settings, and if we search for SSH, we'll see here's the remote SSH extension. There's a setting here, it's called default extensions. And what I can do is I can provide the ID, the identifier of extensions that I want installed every time I connect to a new VM. So I've got these two extensions, close all and open folder, folder content is basically these are the IDs of that, and then they'll get installed every time that I connect. The other thing to note is I've got a third settings tab over here, right? So user and workspace you always have. Now we have one for the remote, so you can have individual settings for that remote machine. Okay, so let's go back over to the app. We'll open up our Python file again. As we did before, I'm going to set a breakpoint. I'm going to hit F5. Now, this is a Flask application, right? It's going to be running on a remote machine. It thinks it's local, as everybody does development locally today, and saying, hey, you know what? You can hit this application on localhost 5000, but it's a remote VM. So how is this going to work? Well, if we go back over to the Remote Explorer, when you're attached to a machine, you can see that there's a SASH or an Explorer down here. It's called Forwarded Ports. And it recognizes the ports that have been exposed on the remote machine. And what I can do is actually forward that to my machine to localhost, right? It's just by clicking on that plus. And now I've got a globe. I can click on that globe, and then the browser will open up. We'll try to browse localhost 5000, which is being port forwarded to some VM somewhere in the cloud, and I hit my breakpoint. And again, you can see as I hover over system.platform, it's all running on the remote machine. I have the full development experience. I can step and do everything that I expect from VS Code running against that remote machine. So we go back over to our app. Here we can press the button and we can do that day in and day out, and it is a lot of fun. Okay, so this is cool. So I've got this great development experience against my remote VM in VS Code. Let's say I've got a machine that I want to have access to from anywhere, from the browser or from the desktop. Well, we can use that using Visual Studio Code Spaces. Let me show you what that looks like. I'm going to close down this connection, and we will connect over to a third machine, which is our Go development box. Right? So we'll right-click again, open up the host in the current window. Now, so here I've got a whole entire Go development environment set up. I'm connecting to it. And if I want to have access to it, one of the things from anywhere, one of the things I can do is I can open up the terminal, and I can register basically this machine with Visual Studio Code Spaces. And to do that, I'm going to type in VSO start. VSO is a command line tool that I've got installed on my machine. VSO, Visual Studio Online. We renamed Visual Studio Online to Visual Studio Codespaces last week, the week before. This tool will be updated soon. But basically, I run VSO start, and it is going to do a couple things for me. It's going to have me log in, the device login, so I'll just copy this code. Go over to this device login page, paste in the code, say next, log into Visual Studio Codespaces using my account. Once that's done, we'll come back over here. Do I want to run a persistent daemon? Yes, I do. It will ask me what's the name of the code space to create. I'll just take the default, which is the name of the machine. And then it's going to ask me one more question about whether or not I want to have access when I'm not logged in. And of course, I do. So all we've done now is on this remote VM, we've registered this machine with Visual Studio Code Spaces. And I get a nice link to it, hold down the control key, click on it, the browser will open up, and we will log in to Visual Studio Code Spaces. This will just take 1 second. Assuming the whole world is not logging in. Excellent, looks good. All right, so here is the machine that I just registered, the devbox-go. And if I click on it, I'm going to open up that machine in the browser. And sort of prove this out, I'm going to dock this machine here on the left, or this browser on the left, sorry. And then if I come over here on the right, here's the same file. I can say hello, and you'll see that the exact same code shows up on both sides because we're editing the exact same machine. And of course, since I'm in Visual Studio Code, I can set a breakpoint, press F5, debug my Node app, my Go application. And when we're done, let me try that one more time. Start our Go application. I'll hit our breakpoint, and I get the full debugging experience for VS Code in the browser. So that's cool. So now I have access to my VMs from the desktop or from anywhere on in the browser. Okay, cool. So that's remote SSH. The last thing I want to show you is how to set up Go or any development box locally on my machine very, very quickly. So let's come back over to Windows. I'm going to close the connection to that machine. And here on Windows, you know, I don't have Rust installed, but maybe I'm looking at a a repository. Maybe Chuck's written on something in Rust. Is, hey, check this out. I don't want to go set it up. I don't know if it's going to be any good. So to do that, what I can do is actually use a development container to spin that up. So we'll come back down here, lower left-hand corner, and I've got the remote containers extension installed on my machine. Here's a link in here to a command that says try a sample. When I click on that, I'm going to get a whole list of different sample dev containers I can try out with different stacks in them, C++ or Go or Java. Down here at the bottom, there's Rust. So I click on Rust. We'll restart VS Code, and it's going to spin up a development or a Docker container. It's going to connect to it, and now I've got a full Rust development environment on my machine. If I say print, I get full completions. If I bring up the terminal, hey, what's my key combination? There we go. You can see I'm actually in a container, Rust C. I've got the compiler available to me. Everything I kind of expect. I press F5, and of course, I get the rich development experience in VS Code, debugging, everything you kind of expect. I think that might have actually been in less than 30 seconds. Okay, so that's it for the demos. Let's switch over to Q&A session. We'll bring Chuck into the conversation, and we'll start to answer some questions. We have about 9 minutes left in this talk. So Chuck, what do we have for questions?
Yeah, the first question we're seeing online is, can I use the remote SSH extension to develop on a Raspberry Pi? Yeah, so the answer on that one is yes. There's you can use a Raspberry Pi 3 or 4, connect to that, and use the remote SSH extension from there. The exception is right now Raspberry Pi zeros or ones don't quite have enough memory to really support this kind of development, but recent Raspberry Pis work just great.
Cool. Want me to take the next question?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Is it recommended to install WSL or WSL2? I heard that there were perf drawbacks with WSL2 on Windows. I'm not 100% sure what's the best way to go with it. I thought it would be installed automatically along with the extension of VS Code, but it has not. So actually, it's the other way around. You do want to install WSL2. There are perf considerations with WSL, we'll call it 1. WSL2 is much, much, much faster. It does not get installed with the extension. You have to set up WSL2 on your own. It's fairly easy to do. Basically, you just turn on one of the options in Windows, restart, and then you go up to the Microsoft Store, and you can find Ubuntu and Debian and all different packages there. Click on it, boom, they download. Highly recommend installing the new Windows Terminal as well, because it gives you, as you saw before, very quick access to the different distros on your machine. But once it's installed, you can, if you did have WSL1, you can say, hey, I want to use WSL2. But by default, I would highly, highly recommend WSL2. Even Docker is moving over to use the same VM infrastructure. So when you're on Docker desktop on Windows, it will use the same VM infrastructure as WSL2. So definitely go with WSL2. That was a long way to say WSL2.
Yes. Yeah. So another question from online is there a way to have multiple configurations for a single dev container? On this one, the basically what you can do is when you're setting up your dev container JSON, we support build arguments. So in your Docker file that you're referencing, you can basically have something like a version passed in, and then just by tweaking that dev container JSON, you can alter the contents of the image that is generated by simply rebuilding the container at that point. So that's how you can take care of that particular problem.
All right, I got one. It's an easy one. Can I answer this one?
Go for it.
The dev containers require Docker installed on the local machine. Yes. That's basically the only thing you require on the local machine. And like I said before, Docker on Windows historically has been a bit of a challenge to set up and configure and sharing drives and all that stuff. The latest Docker that's built on WSL2 is way, way, way easier, a much easier setup. So it's a pretty straightforward installation process. And then once you do that, then you can basically run any stack that can be run inside a container. All right, you're next, Chuck. Pick one.
Great. So another question is, could you use remote to do .NET framework development from a Mac or Linux?
Oh, I was going to answer that one.
Go for it.
Yes.
Exactly. So you can set up a Windows server running SSH, connect to it, and do full framework development from there. And of course, .NET Core runs on Mac OS and Linux as well. So there you can even do that, on a Linux machine if you wanted to.
Awesome. All right, I'll get the next one. I won't softball it back to you. So how does this integrate with Git, moving between branches and collaboration? This, I'm assuming, is containers. And so basically what's happening is the file system is actually local on your machine, is underneath the machine. So like when the container goes away, your files and everything still exist on the machine, but basically it's just regular Git at that point. So you still need to push and pull and commit and do everything you normally would do, which is cool because there's no differences. Your development end-to-end sort of flow remains the same. But because the files are mounted underneath the container, then you don't lose them when the container goes away. And if we're talking about WSL or SSH, then Git is actually installed in the remote, right? And if we're coming through code spaces through the browser, then we're still accessing Git, which is remote on the remote instance. Now, if we're using Visual Studio Code Spaces that Microsoft is hosting the instances, then that's a VM and container running up in our cloud and Git is installed there. So basically all that stuff happens in the remote.
Awesome. So I'll pick up this question. If I wanted to set up several network connections and debug the app container, is it possible to do something like that with .dev container? So the answer to that is you can use Docker Compose with a dev container JSON file. So you could set up multiple containers, Redis a container along with a MongoDB or PostgreSQL container. And then in dev container JSON, you just say which is the actual application container that you want to attach to, and you can open it up from there. A given VS Code window can only be connected to one container at a time, but there are ways where you can use multiple windows to even connect to multiple Docker Compose managed containers. We have some more information on that in our advanced documentation on kind of container setup if you need to do that.
All right. Let me take the next one. Is there a way to copy environment settings from one dev account to another? Could be helpful for setting new devs. Okay, so what do we think this one means here, Chuck? Environment settings from one dev account, dev container?
Yeah, and so the environment variables, if this is related to containers, you can pass in environment variables using, there's a property called remote env, and this can reference local environment variables. Which then allows you to kind of pick those up from your local machine, move them over. Of course, in your Docker file and things like that, you could also simply copy files directly into the container if that's what you think you need to be able to do.
That's a good one. I didn't know that one, Chuck.
So another one is this for only for Linux systems? And so the answer to this, I mentioned this a little bit ago, but for remote SSH, we do support Linux Windows hosts, Windows 10, using the official OpenSSH server, along with Server 2019, and then Mac. And so in all three cases, you can start from a local machine and connect to any kind of remote that you can probably think of.
All right, Chuck, we've got less than 1 minute, so we've got one question left. This one's pretty straightforward. I'll grab it. Does the Git extension work with the remote machines? Yeah, this is related to what I talked about earlier. Git is actually on the remote machine. And so the extension, the built-in Git extension, is actually working, running on that remote machine underneath the VS Code server. Now, if you have like the GitHub pull request and issues extension, you install that extension on the remote machine so it works against the remote Git instance. All right, we have 20 seconds, Chuck. I think it's time to wrap it up.
Yes, so, it is.
Again, you want to go first? You go first.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate the questions and look forward to talking to you guys another time.
And from me, Chris Dias, thank you so much. It was great answering questions. Have fun. Bye.